Back now with more of Lake Effect. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Bonnie North. Plenty of TV shows and movies over the years have been the subject of fan fiction, and many of those adaptations take the characters as they are and place them in plot lines their original creators never dreamed of. James Boyce's new novel is not exactly that kind of fan fiction.
Who Killed the Fonz places the characters from the iconic Milwaukee-based sitcom Happy Days a couple of decades after the series ended its run. It imagines Richie Cunningham, Patsy Weber, Ralph Malph, and others existing in the real world of the 1980s following a tragic motorcycle accident on the Hone Bridge. The book is set in a somewhat fictionalized version of Milwaukee, far from the real world of Jersey City, where we reach the author by phone. James Boyce, welcome to the program.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So why was Happy Days the show that inspired you to get going down this road and write this book?
A few reasons. Happy Days, it has its own place kind of in our culture. We sort of know the world. We know the characters. Everybody knows Fonzie. It's sort of an iconic piece of American culture. But the interesting part about Happy Days is not many people really know that many or remember that many details about Happy Days. We kind of, there's a few plot lines, I guess, but over the course of 10 years, the plot lines kind of fall away and the details of certain elements of the show fall away. What you're left with is an iconic character in Fonzie and this memory of this world that is full of nostalgic virtue and sort of a happy place to return to. It's almost a misremembered past. It's sort of a version of a time and place in America that never really existed, but that doesn't really matter to us because we enjoy the memory of it anyway, the sort of imagined memory. And and then we sort of carry that pleasant feeling with us as we remember ourselves watching the show and go forth from there.
I was just gonna ask that, whether our memories of the show are as much about our memories of ourselves as they were about the show itself.
I think that's exactly right. The fun part of the book is sort of remembering yourself watching the show and sort of what your life was like back then. You're remembering your own childhood. That was part of the project was reintroducing those memories to our lives.
Well, and I don't know whether you want to cop to how old you are, but do you remember watching Happy Days in first runs or reruns?
No, it was reruns. It was and then to sort of write this book, it was sort of going back and looking at YouTube and online summaries of episodes, just seeing the sort of third removed Happy Days experience. You know, you're sort of reading these cataloged summaries of this TV show that the cataloger on the website probably watched in reruns too. So you're getting this sort of prism effect, and then so that is really compelling to me as a sort of working with this piece of kind of appropriated pop culture.
Without giving too much away, give us a quick thumbnail sketch of where these characters, where you believed these characters or decided these characters had gone since their run on ABC ended.
Well, we sort of had an indication based on the end of the TV series. The last episode, Richie says goodbye to Fonzie, and he's going to Hollywood to make it as a screenwriter. That's kind of how we leave Richie Cunningham. If you sort of draw an extension from that, he goes to Hollywood right when the 70s is starting to happen. If we're working from the timeline of the TV series, so you can picture him there with the new Hollywood kind of movement happening, where we have Spielberg and George Lucas and the auteurs starting to take over Hollywood. So how's this wholesome Mr. Everybody's Favorite Son kind of fit into that when the Hollywood culture is working in shades of gray and moral ambiguity? He's a smart, sort of cultured, intelligent writer. He has, strong principles and ethics. And so I think he would probably fit in pretty well there.
But of course he has to rename himself Richard.
Exactly. Nobody wants to take a meeting with a kid named Richie from from Milwaukee. So it's he has to gussy himself up a little bit. He has to develop kind of pretensions and a facade of sorts to survive out in Hollywood. And what he has sort of turned himself into to do what his dream is, it transforms him. And when he comes back to Milwaukee 20 years later, he's unrecognizable. It's alienating to those he left who haven't been out there in Hollywood and don't understand why he has become like he has. And part of the book is him dealing with that and coming to terms with who he has become, who he used to be, who he's going to be. And his friends and loved ones sort of reacting to that and coming to terms with that as well.
Right, because back into Milwaukee, he kind of parachutes for Fonzie's funeral. I don't know that we're giving too much away because the title of the book is Who Killed the Fonz, but he encounters Potsy and Ralph Malph, who have changed very little.
They've changed very little. They've stayed in Milwaukee, and they've had families and taken local jobs and are sort of living the life that they're on track for when he left them. So he's gone one way, they've gone another way. And a lot of the story is sort of reconciling that gulf between these old friends.
Right. You know, and of course, some of this is, I think the timeline is a little complicated because the show was set in the 50s. But of course, it really transpired in the 1970s and 80s. Did that complicate things at all for you? Because a lot of what took place in the show did so really with kind of 1970s sensibilities.
Exactly. It was sort of thread the needle in terms of tone and voice. You know, it would have been fun to kind of get very meta with it and have him sort of rubbing shoulders with, this young filmmaker named Ron Howard or something. getting very very bizarre with it. He could be watching Happy Days or something. Like sort of toyed around with these ideas. But the project turned out to be capturing the voice of the show and adding literary value to the show, to the voice. Sort of taking this ephemeral piece of television and sort of trying to elevate it into something with substance, with literary value.
And still sort of maintaining that kind of inherent sweetness that existed in the show and with the characters.
That was really important, which we sort of realized drafting and sort of working on it, was how important that was. Once you took that out, the thing, it just sort of fell apart and wasn't Happy Days anymore and wasn't really anything that we remembered. Or, we definitely learned sort of the importance of the sweetness.
There's, of course, a mystery in this book, but really it seems like at the heart of things, you're exploring the nature of friendship, really.
Exactly. The theme of the book, I think, is the nature of friendship. What happens as we grow up and grow apart geographically or, spiritually or other ways? What happens to those friendships? And do those friendships still have value? And do they serve us? And how do we sort of bring those on and as we go forward? One of the most iconic friendships in Happy Days in American culture, I guess, is Fonzie and Richie Cunningham. We sort of grew up with Happy Days, and we sort of grew apart from Happy Days as we grew up, and Richie grew up with Fonzie, and he grew apart from Fonzie as he grew up. We grow apart from our pasts, sort of as a culture. What do we do with that past that we sort of are still dragging around kind of behind us? It hasn't really gone anywhere. Is still there. So how do we reconcile it? And how does it serve us? And how do we serve it?
Well, and it seems like the era in which you set this book is key, because any later and you get into the social media era, and it seems like friendship might have been a different animal if, they had been able to track each other down over Facebook or Instagram.
It would have been a lot shorter book. it does make you sort of look at our current situations with how we communicate and connect with each other, and give ourselves kind of a gut check about, are we really connecting with people, and is there more connecting we can do? Are we content to have these sort of value to be had by going a little bit further and really connecting on a deeper level with people.
Maybe this gets heavier than we want to, but in some ways this book and using Happy Days, this is kind of a metaphor for our younger selves as people or even as a culture.
Yeah, that's definitely how I saw it as I was working on it. And that was definitely the goal was to kind of explore that. I think that's kind of what makes it literature, is exploring that kind of idea. It gets to the sort of the human experience is that's a vital part of it. Growing, changing. So taking something that's seen as kind of this kind of goofy, lowbrow thing, an old TV show, and sort of exploring that sort of fuller aspect of it. That's really what sort of motivated the project and pushed it forward.
At the same time, it had to be something of a delicious exercise to take these characters who, already existed in our, in our sort of collective imagination and do this hypothetical with them.
Yeah, it was delicious fun, is how I'd say. it's appropriation art.
Do you have qualms about that as a writer?
No, it's interesting to me. I'm a fan of appropriation artists, folks like Warhol or Richard Prince. Yeah, that's exciting to me because I can get heady about it, but I think culture is so dominant in our lives that our relationship to it has value in exploring and portraying in art and literature. Playing with that was pretty meaty and juicy and just fun. A lot of this book is fun. It's not more fun than other books I've done. Other books I've done are very, very tend to be, gritty realism, I guess would be the way to put it. But this is a fun, page-turning novel.
Well, and I have to say, some of the most enjoyable parts of the book are when Richie or Richard is talking with his very stereotypical Hollywood agent, who's brought in this money from, I forget where the producer is from, but they want to produce this knockoff of Star Wars, and just imagining this conversation that's going on between the Richie we know and sort of the Hollywood shark agent.
Right. He's at the moment where they're asking him to betray his values, his principles. He's in the crass 1980s in Hollywood, where it's all blockbusters and box office, and he's trying to stick to his guns as an auteur and a serious filmmaker. Being put in this position now, where it's either go in this crass direction from these people you don't respect and don't care for their violent tastes, or have nothing, basically. And because the project's not going to go forward unless he takes this project, it's his only option. So sort of navigating those decisions, that's kind of sort of the experience that was especially juicy to explore. That's a real human kind of moment where he's being asked to compromise. We compromise a lot in our lives. As we get older, we compromise. So having him forced to compromise in this way, it really shows sort of how far he's come from the Milwaukee of his youth that he remembers the pleasant oasis.
One is tempted to say that he is reluctant to jump the shark.
He is absolutely reluctant to jump the shark, which is it's in the book, by the way.
Yes, it is.
It's not how Fonzie does.
Speaking along these lines, though, when we think about, because I think Richie has been trying to pitch, a Cormac McCarthy story to make his film.
He's gotten really into this Cormac McCarthy novel, Sutri.
Right.
It's a very dense, obscure novel, and he's trying to push it through crass 1980s blockbuster Hollywood.
What was it like for you to pitch this novel?
This novel was it's interesting. The origins of it were sort of interesting. Simon Schuster was interested in writing and taking Happy Days, the property, and turning it into a novel. And they asked me if I would be interested in that. So we had to sort of create an outline. We had to sort of develop it, and then we had to get approval from the copyright holders of the intellectual property of Happy Days, which is the CBS Corporation these days. And so there was a interesting component of this, which was working in compliance with this corporate entity, and working inside those confines added a whole new kind of aspect and sort of limiting but fun, freeing in a lot of ways, restricting in other ways, kind of component to it.
I note you do not have any blurbs from any of the actors involved in Happy Days, however.
Yeah, well, it was funny. We tried to get one from Henry Winkler, but his management folks were very adamant about not giving him anything related to Happy Days.
Because he's involved in enough other TV shows now, and he is a novelist himself. So,
yeah, he's an accomplished children's book author.
Yeah,
but hopefully, I don't know. Maybe he'll find it, and maybe he'll see some see that it's a serious minded kind of effort, and take a look at it.
It'd be something to spot him at an airport reading this book.
Ears open.
Well, listen, James Boyce, I enjoyed it a lot. Thank you so much for taking a few minutes to talk about it.
It was my pleasure.
James Boyce is the author of the new novel Who Killed the Fonz, as well as four previous novels. He's also an occasional contributor to publications such as Esquire, Salon, and McSweeney's. We reached him on the line from New Jersey.